You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Jessica, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Very well. A little chilly. It's been snowing here. A large amount of snow was delivered a couple of nights ago, which is making life. It's actually quite Christmassy. So I'm just north of Salt Lake City in Utah, as you can tell from my deep Western accent here.
It snows there all year round, pretty much, no?
No, not where we live. There are places where it snows much better. So we must be in these sort of cheap areas where the snow doesn't quite make it. But I don't ski. My wife does. So everyone says, God, you know, Park City is fantastic. Like, oh, yeah, well, I suppose. Don't really understand it, but anyway.
I'm going there for the first time in February, so I'm very excited.
Oh, it is a lovely place, actually. Look, I've completely changed my tune. But so there you are. That's what it's all about, really, isn't it? Just change, adjustment.
Yeah. Pivot.
Pivot. Yes. Isn't that a surprise? So just as a brief introduction, you are the CEO, founder, chief cook, and head bottle washer of Pivot and Slay, which I think is both the most amazing and also a slightly scary name, considering you have this sort of Wall Street background, this idea of slay. In other words, if you don't pivot, I will slay you.
No.
In true Goldman Sachs style. Yeah.
It's funny. Well, right now, around Christmas time, everyone's putting slay, like the Santa sleigh.
So yeah, that's right. No, I didn't mean it like that. I meant kill, destroy.
I know what you meant. Oh, well, during Halloween, they had Michael Myers with the sleigh. So yeah, it's not meant in that way. No, it's not about forcing you to pivot, but life just kind of nudging you and throwing things at you and you kind of adapting as you go along so that you can still succeed no matter what.
What drove you to this really interesting departure from Wall Street? Well, tell me a bit more about your Wall Street background, because that's always fascinating.
Yeah, well, as a child, I wanted to be a lawyer. That was my big dream. I wanted to work on a big firm on Wall Street. I don't know why. I just figured that listening to both sides of a story always fascinated me because it always helped me evolve as a human being. And so I became more inquisitive than argumentative, but I think the inquisitive nature led me down the road of being a litigator because I got to ask a lot of questions and kind of do some investigatory work. And the thing about being a lawyer is usually out of law school, you get thrown in a room full of boxes that you're just looking through thousands of documents. But what ended up happening with me is that I met a professor who worked at the New York Stock Exchange and she offered me an internship during my time in law school. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And because I showed my work ethic there, I was able to get a job right out of law school. And I was thrown into litigation on day one, taking depositions and doing discovery and then eventually getting into a hearing scenario, which was really fun. And I loved it for a long time until later in my career, about 10 years in, well, a little before that, 8 years in, I started to feel a little bit caged. I think my growth had been stunted and I was kind of forced into taking on cases that they brought me, whether or not I agreed with the charges. And I started to push back a lot on that and think to myself, man, like, I don't want to be doing this work I don't feel passionate about every single day.
Yes.
And that's kind of what led me to explore my entrepreneurial side.
And that must be quite the challenge, really, for someone like you when you're at that point where you begin to sort of, you know, think, God, this just doesn't feel right. That must be a real challenge for litigators and lawyers generally, where your bosses give you this case and say, right, go and make 2 + 2 = 7, effectively. So I suppose there comes a point. Is that sort of how it feels after a while?
In this scenario, it did to me, yes, because the market became overregulated. And I think a lot of the things they were taking a stance on didn't really resonate with me. And I started to feel inauthentic in that job. Like I wasn't really able to capture my own personality, my own passion. And it just became really hard for me to send a lot of love the way of my career, which, yes, is scary because my whole life was crafted to get to this goal. And then there I was in the goal and it wasn't panning out the way that I wanted it to. And I was scared because I didn't know what else I had inside me yet. I didn't know where else to go.
And that's the question, isn't it? So the real tension is, you know that this is something that you don't want to do. And it gets to a point where almost every molecule in your body is rebelling against this. But the question is, what am I going to do? What's the evolution? What's the pathway to writing the book and creating this guidance that Pivot and Slay is? Tell me more about Pivot and Slay.
Okay, well, Pivot and Slay is a coaching and business consultation company. So I work with entrepreneurs and I empower them to pivot their mindsets and their businesses so they can scale and slay their goals and ultimately find their freedom, because freedom is really what I'm passionate about. Like, allowing people, I think a lot of times when we think of freedom, we think of time freedom. Like, I could be my own boss, I could do my own thing. And yes, that's part of it. But for me, the thing that drove me the most was alignment freedom, this capacity to be around people who I feel like I can help the most, who I feel like I'm doing the most good for. And that was what was missing in my corporate job. And so that's what I help entrepreneurs achieve. And my book, Pivot and Slay, is really about the way that I did that for myself, from pivoting out of my corporate career and starting a business I knew nothing about, and how I developed and scaled that business ultimately to a point where I could now teach other people to do it too. Because Pivot and Slay was not the business I started when I left Wall Street. When I left Wall Street, I started a barbershop, a luxury.
I was going to say, because that's the other fascinating. Please tell me more.
Well, I was on Wall Street and I wasn't happy. And at the same time, a lot of us go through this where we're like, wow, we don't know what else to do. This is all we know. So we don't do anything, right? I think we've all been in a scenario like that. And then we're kind of just miserable. And then our misery just becomes who we are. And then it just goes on and on and on, right? I might have become one of those people if it wasn't for my then husband losing his job. He lost his job and we had just bought a house and we were about to have a baby. And we were like, oh, this is not great timing, right? And he said, well, I have a really good business idea. What do you think about taking this gigantic risk a week before we have a baby and throwing a bunch of money into a business? And his business idea, this is 10 years ago. The barbering world wasn't really as popular as it is now. It was kind of just like, oh, that shop's been here for 50 years. No one has changed the tile for 100 years, and we're just going to go get a $10 cut. We were trying to break through and make a more upscale environment and place for men to go that wasn't a salon. So it's a men's place, but not a salon, and for a normal price point, right? So it's this luxury barbershop idea, and that wasn't happening at the time. And I said, man, there's nothing like that. Like, there is a need for that in our area in New York. Let's do it. And that was the first time where I solely made a choice based on my gut instincts. Yes. Because there was nothing logical about this choice. I mean, we are a week away from having a child, our first child. We had just spent our life savings on a house. So me giving the rest of the money to him to start a business that neither of us could cut hair, neither of us have ever owned a business, like, this, by all stretches of logic, made no sense.
I mean, what possibly could go wrong? Exactly.
What could go right was really the big question. But in my heart of hearts, it felt right. So I did it. I did it. And he did it. And I stayed at Wall Street for 2 years while he did the grind in the business. And then we talked, like, at night, talk about what to do and how to pivot and how to hire. And we were just like stumbling along. But because of our grit, we made it happen and it exploded. And 2 years later, I was like, great, I'm going to leave my cage and find my freedom by working in the business too. And we can scale it. And that's what we did.
Which is a fantastic story. But what is really interesting is the two things. First of all, you talk about your gut instinct. And secondly, you talk about this concept of grit and determination. And I think that those are two really important, if not the most important, characteristics really of success generally, is the ability to stick at something, even though you may not know what's around the corner, and having that drive, that determination to follow your instincts. Is that something that you realized you were doing at the time, or looking back, are you able to think, actually, I was quite good then, could have just given up. I could have just decided that it was too difficult with all of these changing situations you were forced into. How do you view that through the lens of your new venture? If you were to look at yourself, how would you process that sort of that grit? Sorry, did that make any sense, any of that, just then?
Yes, I think it did. Yes, I'll interpret it for the audience.
Thank you. Yes, that's very kind of you. Yes.
Well, okay, so that was not the very first time I had followed my gut, but it was the very first time I had followed it confidently. And I think sometime in law school, I realized that every time I had not listened to my gut, I had failed. And every time I listened to it, even though I didn't know where it would lead me, I somehow succeeded. And so in that moment, when I said yes to the business venture, I very much knew I was going off this solely based off of my gut. And I just knew I'd figure it out along the way because I am a disciplined and determined person. And I knew if I put my focus and my drive towards that, it would succeed. And I think it's that confidence that so many people lack where they don't trust themselves. They hear that inner compass talking to them like, you should really do this. And then their brain talks them out of it. No, it's too scary. It's not the right time. There's too much going on. You don't know what you're doing. And so then they follow that logical side of themselves instead of what's in their heart. That's when they start to lose that momentum and drive. I think if you follow what your inner compass is telling you, that's when you really can build up the confidence. Because guess what? I could look back now on all my decisions and be like, wow, I was right all those times. I should give myself more credit than I do. Look at the evidence, right? Because I have to put my lawyer hat back on. Look at the evidence. Every time I followed my gut, it was okay. It worked. And I think that that's what people don't do. They don't look back and think about those moments. They need that awareness. It's just like a little switch, just a little bit of awareness that creates that confidence.
And because you are, as an entrepreneur, always just piling forwards, head down, driving forwards. And another interesting thing you just said is evidence, because there's this saying that fear is a temporary lack of information. So with all of this gut instinct, drive, determination, that is always, for some reason, balanced by a healthy dose of fear. And the fear normally materializes at 3 o'clock in the morning when your mind is racing through all of these potential permutations. So to be able to say, hang on, this is going to be okay because it's been all right in the past, you have to learn that. Because I'm sure when you deal with entrepreneurs, that's one of the big challenges. How do you get people to have faith in themselves? What's the process that you take them through?
I always tell them to challenge themselves on a smaller scale and test it out, right? Because if you kind of give yourself those little challenges throughout the week where you're following the gut on something that you view as like nominal, you'll start to see the pattern that I'm talking about. And a lot of times I'll have them talk about past experiences where they just kind of dove into something. They weren't quite sure how it would get them to where they wanted to be, but it worked out. I think it's just more of an awareness because by the time they come to me, they've already had all of these experiences. They're just so busy with their head down. They haven't taken their head out of the ground to look around and see all of the facts that are laid out around them. And I think that's the piece that's missing is just that awareness and vision and kind of the neutrality that I, as a third party, can see about them. They just have to start to see it in themselves is really what it is. It already exists before I enter.
So this is the concept of sort of a different perspective, mentoring or very similar concepts. Is that something that you had the benefit of when you were building that challenging barbershop business?
No. And that's why I want to give it to everybody, because if I had had someone around me that had gone through this before, I could have collapsed time instead of going through years of trial and error, which is how I figured out the barbershop industry. I would have been able to be like, oh, this is a better move. Oh, that's a better move, and get to my goal faster because someone else was guiding me. Without that, you're really left to just continuously risk some stuff and try some things and see what works and what doesn't. And that's exactly what we did when we opened Mad Men Barbershop. And it took a long time to get in a rhythm, and it took a long time for me to build up my own personal confidence within that business. Because the truth was, I knew business from a corporate Wall Street standpoint. Small business is a different animal. And although I could apply some strategies to the small business, it was really like a trial by fire.
Yes. And I suppose one of the frequent responses you probably get from entrepreneurs who necessarily have to have protective egos, because that's kind of what makes people entrepreneurs, is, well, thing is that you don't actually have any specific industry knowledge about what I'm doing. But the answer is actually you don't need that. And again, in your example, if someone came along and said, look, I don't really know anything specifically about barbers and I don't know how to cut hair, but I have worked in this type of business before, which is very similar. So how would you answer this sort of pushback from the entrepreneur who's saying, well, you know, I think I understand what you're saying, but don't you need to have industry knowledge about what I'm trying to do?
My answer is always business is business. Business strategies apply to industries across the board. There are certain things you can do within the business that will help any business, no matter what industry you're in. And the main thing that I love to help people do is show up to that business differently as their more empowered self. Because when you're showing up to lead people, that's a different feeling than when you're showing up to boss people. And I think a lot of business owners, they stumble upon success and in a haphazard way, and they are trying to still navigate as they're trying to quote unquote lead. And what that ends up doing is them just bossing everybody around. So instead of leading by example and showing up empowered and allowing other people to become empowered. So to me, I'm going to teach you business strategies that you can apply to any industry. And on top of that, I'm going to show you how to show up so that your employees and staff want to succeed and help you build up your brand, which is a very hard thing to do in this day and age. Like, you really have to build that brand culture and company value in other people below you. And you do that by leading instead of bossing.
And a lot of that problem really comes from business owners who are just so immersed in the business and working for the business, rather than having the ability to take a step back and work on the business. Do you see that as one of the biggest challenges that you come across?
Yes, that's one of the things I help entrepreneurs with the most, is to scale the business, you have to delegate. But to delegate is probably one of the hardest things that a bunch of type A egotistical entrepreneurs can do, right? Because they think they're irreplaceable. But the truth is, you are not irreplaceable. Someone else can do what you do inside of your business if you delegate properly, if you train them properly, if you hire properly. And so I work with people on the proper way to do all of those things so that they can have a certain level of comfort in allowing these people to do all of the heavy lifting while they work on the brand vision as the leader of the organization.
And do you find that structure is lacking in many of the people that you work with in terms of the ability to delegate is actually much easier if there is a structure and a process that can be used? So do you find that as you begin to sort of start unpacking the way that these businesses are built, that many of them are lacking in that fundamental structure that will enable them to grow?
Absolutely. I think most small business owners, as I said before, like stumble upon the success. They didn't necessarily lay down the proper foundation to build a really successful business. It just happened to all fall into place. And then when they get to the point where they want to grow and they want to scale, they don't know how, because the foundation they built the whole company on is wobbly. And they have to almost, like, I describe it like a slingshot. You have to pull yourself back a second and lay that groundwork you forgot to lay at the onset, before you can really have an impact and build upon that further. Because you made it, congrats, you went this far alone. But if you don't get your processes down and solidified, you will not be able to build anything stronger than what you have today.
And would you say that perspective is one of the most valuable things that you bring to an owner or an entrepreneur?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that an outside perspective of someone who isn't in the muck is exactly what these people need, because they are trying to ascend to the CEO role. They think they're the CEO, but if you're at your business every day, you're just an employee like you were before you started your business. Like, to become the CEO, you really have to like ascend to that 50,000 foot view where you're focusing on the vision and you're not inside doing the work all the time. And many people are still inside and they don't have to be. There's freedom to be had. You just have to know how to achieve it.
So in companies where you've got multiple founders that are still part of the management team, not just a sort of like a sole entrepreneur, as you begin to unpack where they are and show them a different perspective, typically do you find that there isn't actually at the root of everything a clear understanding of what the brand should be or what the company is. So do you find that it begins to get deeper and deeper and deeper? The more you peel back the layers, fundamental issues start appearing, like we don't actually know what we are or what the message should be. So do you have any sort of examples or thoughts, that sort of scenario?
Absolutely. I think for the most part, people are focused on making money because they are leaving their 9-to-5 or their corporate life or whatever. And they don't even create a culture in the company. They don't even really create a brand. They have a product or a service, but they haven't cultivated a brand. And the reason is it takes time to build a brand. It doesn't take time to build a product. You could put a product out there tomorrow. You could put a service out there tomorrow. The brand creation is the long game. And no one's looking to get in on the long game, right? They want the short-term satisfaction and the short-term gratification. The brand, though, is what builds wealth. It's what builds the company. It's what builds longevity. And lots of people have failed to create that within their company. And a product and service is only going to take you so far because people buy based off their emotion. And if you're tapping into their emotion by utilizing your brand and your personality and infusing your energy into the brand, that's what's going to get you the long-term clients, the long-term company. Right now, you just have a product or a service if you haven't created the brand awareness.
And is that something that you learned firsthand from the business that you ran? In other words, you've got something that is ubiquitous to a certain extent. You know, there are many people doing that, but how do you differentiate yourself? How do you build those brand values so people feel compelled to come back to your barbershop rather than somewhere else? What were the real sort of lessons or key points that you learned in that process that you're able to bring to other people?
So both of my businesses have a personality infused into them, Mad Men Barbershop and Pivot and Slay. There's tons of barbershops. There's also tons of business coaches. What makes me unique is that it's me. I'm here. I'm infusing my energy and my personality into these brands. When we opened Mad Men, we did focus on creating a lifestyle brand because we knew that would be important to attract people to, because what other reason would they come to us? I mean, we had no established barber staff yet. We had no business in the industry prior to this. So we had to attract them by building a culture around getting a haircut. We had to build a men's place with a man's feel and attract them in with the branding, which is what we did. And everyone thought that was crazy because guess what? In the beginning, we had to put a lot of money into creating that brand. It didn't get an ROI the next day. We didn't have 7,000 people waiting to get a haircut. It took time to build the allure and the personality of the brand. But then down the line, when the industry became saturated in the luxury barbershop world, we were already infiltrated in everybody's mind. We already had brand awareness. And so people kept coming back to us because we had established that from the get-go. So I learned that with Mad Men. And then I continued to do that with Pivot and Slay by infusing who I am and my values into that coaching business, because coaches are a dime a dozen now too. Well, why would you want to work with me? Well, because this is who I bring. This is the brand that I bring to the table that no one else can bring.
Does that not cause you scaling issues though? So in other words, having that personality-driven business, how do you overcome the problem of not being able to be in 100 places at the same time?
Well, I think infusing your energy into a brand is not the same as being the entire brand. I am not the entire brand, but when you work with me, you know, this is the level of service I'll provide. This is the type of energy I'll provide. And anyone I hire will be aligned with exactly my mission and my energy and my personality. And so you know what to expect. And the same for Mad Men. As we scale, you know what to expect when you walk in the door. So my customers don't have a barber. They have a barber shop. They don't come in to see a specific person. They come in for the brand. And that's the same with the coaching business. So I think it's an asset and necessity in order to scale to have a separate personality for the brand that is aligned with who you are and what you bring, because you're the one leading in your business. You're leading the vision. So the vision's, of course, going to be part of who you are, because that's authentic. And that is the most effortless way to build a brand if it's authentic to you, because it won't be work. It will be fun.
And that's really important, I think, isn't it? Because there are business owners that feel constrained that they cannot grow their business because they feel compelled that they need to be the person taking the calls or speaking to the customers because no one else can do it right and no one else has that same energy. And so what you're able to do is to take a business which is really dependent on that foundation, on those values, yet still grow it. And so those are very valuable firsthand lessons that you've been able to demonstrate in your business. So does that make it easier for you to convey the successful nature of the outcome of your coaching?
I think yes, because I have done this for myself. I'm doing it right now. The reason that people are attracted to my brand is because I am doing these things. So it's already worked, because if you've leaned into me, it's worked on you. So you know that these work, you know that these strategies are applicable and are successful.
One of the biggest challenges though is cases. Do you have examples? Because if you're selling a product or a service, they're different things. It's easier to demonstrate a product, or in some respects, it's easier to demonstrate other services. What are the sort of the biggest challenges that you have in being able to demonstrate potential success in an industry that is, or in a business that is very much personality driven?
Are we talking about the coaching business?
Yeah, the coaching business. I think, you know, the haircut is either a good or a bad haircut.
Yeah, that's true. Well, with the coaching business, when you're first starting out, right, sometimes the only proof of concept you have is you. And I think that's what I started with, was showing people how I've done this for myself. And so by example, I can do it for you because I've already done it twice for myself. And so that's how it started, right? But then when you're in a service-based business, it's really important to start showcasing and highlighting all of your client wins. And social media is an amazing place to do that, right? Just creating graphics with things people text you, or things people say, or reviews people leave, is such a beautiful way to show that what you're doing is working and allowing other people to trust that brand a little bit extra.
So in your legal career, you had outcomes, positive outcomes, the case goes your way, the judgment is in your favor. So that's the win. In what you were building with the barbershop, you've got over a decade of success, you've got numbers that represent that. Does that not make you feel that when you're working as a consultant, is one way of describing it, but when you're not working in the business with someone, you're sort of on the outside as an advisor, is that a challenge in its own right? Because if you want to roll your sleeves up and get your hands dirty, as it were, is that slightly frustrating when you're having to always work with someone else who's the owner of the business?
Well, I thought it would be, but what happened was I got really clear on my role and I got really clear on the types of people I wanted to work with. And after several, like almost now a year and a half, 2 years of doing this, what I've learned is I'm very selective at the onset because I want people who will do the work. If they're not willing to do the work, their results will not shine through and it won't be good for them or for me. So now I am very selective. The thing is, it's hard as someone who's built several businesses to not go in and be like, let me just do this for you, okay? But what I've learned is my role is really to advise them of different paths they can take and allow them the autonomy to choose which of those feels right for them. Because almost like children, right? You want to raise them so that they're independent. My goal is to get my clients to start thinking and acting like CEOs so that they could go spread their wings and keep on growing. I don't want them to be with me forever. That's not the goal. The goal is for them to understand how to become autonomous and strong and empowered in their own right so that they can continue to build successful businesses. And so their wins in their business are my wins too, because it's teamwork, right? I can guide them, but they have to actually go do it.
And again, the big challenge, as you say, I mean, I was talking to someone a few weeks back who was like provides marketing, you know, very top level marketing services. And she was saying that they have a strict no policy, which I think is something that probably developed over time, where again, you say you're selective, but is that something that you've sort of decided over time, having gone out and met lots of people, you realize there are some people you just cannot help?
Yes, it actually comes back down to systems and processes, believe it or not, because if you have a system of questions and a pre-screening process, you can weed out almost everyone that doesn't align with what you want, either by them self-identifying as not the right fit or you identifying them as not the right fit. But that's not to say it's a perfect system. I've taken clients that I thought would be a good fit, and I learned later that they just weren't. You have to pivot in those instances. But I think there are definitely ways to make that easier as you learn, as you go through. I think sometimes it takes those mistakes. So yes, I wasn't as selective at first as I am now, because I've learned the hard way in some instances on who meshes with me and who doesn't. And now I see the signs earlier, which is nice.
And do you have a particular story or situation that really surprised you in a very positive way with one of your clients?
Yes, actually, a client that I still have today. He was very excitable when we first met, and I knew he was at the point where he wanted change. But when we started diving in and I would give him feedback and kind of tasks to do, I was noticing that he wasn't really implementing. And I let it go for a little bit, because I believe that people need to accept the advice and kind of implement it in a way that is meaningful to them. So I like to back off a little bit and give them some space to feel it out and not get overwhelmed. But then it kind of went too long. And I finally had to sit down with him and I said, listen, why are you paying me all this money if you're not going to implement anything? Nothing's going to get done this way. And I feel like you're just avoiding it all. And we had that tough conversation and he was like, thank you for the push. I really appreciate this. Things are going to change. And I'm like, all right, we'll see. Well, he went on to implement all the things that I had said he should. And he has had massive success ever since. And he is now leaning in more than ever. He's hired people. He had trouble hiring before. Now he has tons of applications. He has grown by 3 additional employees in the last month and a half. So he's just soaring. And it was great to see, because I saw the potential in him before he did. And now he sees it too. And he's shining his light.
And I think many coaches would not have the strength of character to confront their clients in such a way. They tend to be much more passive. I'll provide you with systems and ways of keeping notes, or I think that's something that's probably very much built on that strong foundation of your litigation career. Do you think that's the case?
I do, actually. I think that I have a knack for being compassionate, but also very direct. And I think my delivery is, I get what you're going through because I've been there before, but here's the tough love. This is really what you need to do to set your sights on the goals that you told me you want. And for me, it's not totally selfless. Like my role, the reason I love this job is because I love to help people, but I'm not going to help people that don't want to help themselves. For me, I'd rather tell you, you know, if you're not going to do the work, I'm not taking your money anymore, because this isn't fun for me. I don't want you to just get nothing done and just keep throwing your money my way. Go take your money. And when you're ready to work, come back. Because to me, that's more interesting. It's more interesting for me to work with people who are motivated. So I think some coaches maybe wouldn't do that, but I want to help. I want to see people shine, but I am direct and I'm not for everybody. And that's okay. This is my personality. And if you don't like some tough love sometimes, then probably not for me.
I think that's hugely important, because what you don't want to do is just have an agreement with someone, but actually at the end of the day, there is no outcome. So I think part of the, you know, really interesting thing about Pivot and Slay is that there's almost like a process. Well, it has to work both ways. I can only work with the willing, as it were. So don't think that I'm just going to go in and provide you with this sort of cookie cutter approach. It has to work for both of us. So there's a bit of checking each other out, as it were, before you can go forward. So I think that's actually quite compelling compared to this feeling that I'm just going to get another sausage machine approach.
Definitely not with me. My program is customized to fit the needs of the person. And I give a lot of different ways to interact with me and get feedback from me and learn from me, whether that's one-on-one, in a group setting, accountability calls, accountability worksheets, homework, videos. Like I have it all, but it's customized with that person. So if you tell me you like to learn a certain way or you like to communicate a certain way, like that's what we're going to do, because I want you to work in the way that's best for you. This isn't the Jessica show, right? This is to let the other person shine. And that's my coaching style, because I know that that's the best way for them to spread their wings and go be successful even after they work with me.
And would you describe your approach? I mean, because coaching is a word that I think is ubiquitous and therefore is diluted to a certain extent. Would you position yourself more as a like an interim CEO to a certain extent?
Actually, I wouldn't, because I am not going to go in and do the work for you. That is something that you have to do in order to learn how to be your best self in your company. I don't like the word consultant because consultant indicates that I'm going to go in and fix stuff for you and then give it to you in a bow. That's not my style. I think even though the word coaching is not so positive right now, I think it is, though, a good descriptive term for what I do, which is I'm here to be your mentor, your leadership mentor. I'm going to be your cheerleader. I'm going to give you the tough love when you need it. And you're going to come out being a better leader after we are done. And that is what a coach does, right? They cultivate the natural talent that you already have inside you. They just help you bring it out and they position you in the right place for you to shine. And that's exactly what I do for my clients.
And I think the important thing is, as you're saying, is to be outcome orientated. In other words, we're going to go through this process, but ultimately this is the outcome that we want. This is the deliverable. And that might be more sales. That might be a greater approach to recruiting. That might be, so is that how you work? Is we say, well, what do we want to achieve? What are the outcomes that we want? And then let's find out how we can work together to deliver those specific outcomes.
Yes, that's the first thing I ask everybody is, what do you want? And you wouldn't believe how many blank stares I get because no one's used to that. Everyone's concentrating on what they don't want. But guess what? You get what you focus on. If you focus on what you don't want, that is what will come your way. If you focus on what you do want, then we can actually create a path together to get you there in a way that makes sense for you. And that's different for everyone because not everybody has the same personality. And that's okay. There's not a cookie cutter method out there. I think you should take what you hear from people, internalize it, and make it work for you. Just because another approach worked for someone else doesn't mean that that's what will work for you. And you have to be able to pivot within that approach and make it yours. That's what I teach people to do.
And I think that must be ultimately the most fulfilling thing is when whole heartfelt advice comes from you, in other words, based on your experience, not based on studied intellectualism, but based on your hard-won experience, when you're articulating that to someone and they listen to you and they take that advice and positive things happen. That must solve all of those and unwind all of those sleepless nights that you had when you were litigating Chapter 43 of the Investment Company Act or something. Does that rebalance everything and put you back on a more humane footing?
Yes, I think so. And one of my core values is connection. I really value creating that connection with people and not just making them feel like a factory number. I want them to really have a customized and personalized experience with me and form that bond with me and make them feel all the feels.
And I can see from your look just then that you are thinking, listen, you stupid man, there is no Section 43 of the Investment Company Act. But I think now would be a good time to switch gears as I sit here rattling my piece of paper with my Hooked on Startups quick fire questionnaire.
Okay, I'm ready.
Hopefully this is a complete surprise. Question number one. Jessica Dennehy, what is your favorite word?
Ooh, myriad.
Ooh, say that again?
Myriad.
That is...
It's like a lot.
I know what it means, myriad, but it's
just in case someone else doesn't.
It's the way you pronounce it. It's like a sort of ski slope of ups and downs, and oh, it's fantastic. I can see why. Question number two, what is your least favorite word?
Moist.
That's funny. I don't know why. I quite like that word. That's right. I know. It's something to do with the way that the beginning and the end just don't seem to fit together. Question number three, what are you most excited about right now?
I am most excited about my second book that is launching soon about startups and what to expect in the first 12 months.
Oh, wow. And when's that coming out?
It should be out in January.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we will be sure to add copious links to that and make sure that everyone knows about that. Leading on to question four, what turns you off right now?
What turns me off? Well, right now I'd have to say that talking about anything negative is a huge turnoff for me. The news turns me off. I don't turn on the news. It's a turnoff to me. I don't want to talk about the news. I just want to look at my bright future and your bright future and bask in the glory of that.
Because it's all a simulation anyway, so none of it's real. Question number five. What sound or noise do you love?
My kids laughing.
And what sound or noise do you hate?
My little one, when she screams right in my ear for bugs. Whenever she sees the bug, she loses her mind. Like someone's murdering her. It's crazy. I hate that sound.
It's like, for God's sake, what's wrong with you? It's just a giant tarantula, for God's sake. Number 7, and you may plead the 5th. What is your favorite curse word? Brilliant. It is just the best, isn't it?
It's the only one I say. My daughter's only 6 and she's like, Mommy, are there any other curse words? All you say is fuck.
Well, that's fine, because you can take the effort and go, duck, duck. It's just brilliant. I wish I'd invented it. I wish I'd sort of copyrighted it. Question number 8. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Ooh, I think I would probably do something with travel, because I just love to travel. So maybe like run a travel agency or something like that. Or I always kind of thought about following people on their vacations and taking like candid photos of them for their memories. Like would be kind of
cool. Oh, you mean following them with their permission?
With their permission, yes. Yes.
Like, not just following, generally.
Like, then they have like curated memories from that trip. And I thought that would be cool because then I could travel around the world.
That'd be interesting. Like a fly on the wall, sort of the documentary of the Smiths' holiday to Argentina.
Yeah, that'd be cool, right?
I think it would actually, yeah. What question 9, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Oh, there's so many. I don't know if I could just answer. Garbage men? I don't know.
Final question then. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Thank you for raising 2 beautiful, kind daughters.
Isn't that the best? That is the greatest challenge, I think, isn't it? Yes, forget about business. It's just trying to learn to be a parent. But anyway, Jessica, it's been such a pleasure having you on. What's the best way of finding out more about you, of contacting you, getting a hold of your new book, and just generally understanding more about how you can potentially help these people?
You can visit pivotandslay.com. That's Anne spelled out, A-N-D. And you can find my book on there. You can apply for my coaching program. You can find my Instagram, my Facebook, everything. Connect with me there, pivotandslay.com.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for being a guest on Hooked on Startups, and I very much look forward to following your progress and staying in touch. So, Jessica, thank you once again.
Thank you.